Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Larry Warder, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Education. Also joining us in our conversation is Denise Rabin, partner in IBM's financial management practice. Larry, through the new OMB Improved Credit Management Initiative, agencies are set to strengthen the way they award and service loans, manage their portfolios, and collect their debts. Would you tell us about your department's management and strategy for improving the credit management capabilities, and what's the department done with respect to its credit management?
Al, that's a good question. When I first came to the department, one of the two or three things that senior management asked was that I put on my list of things to deal with credit reform. We had a good action in place. Top management had put together a group of the most senior people in this area of financial management and had regular monthly meetings around credit reform issues and what we could do to improve. Now, one of the almost unique in government issues that we have in credit reform is that we're responsible for a subsidy on student loans. And what we are responsible for booking on our balance sheet is the estimated amount of that subsidy over the life of the loans that we've made. So in our case, a huge dollar number, since we have a $400-plus billion portfolio of student loans, is how much are we going to have to pay going forward? Now, we have a number of PhDs in economics who work the modeling issues because it's dependent on where do you believe interest rates will be, because these have, depending on when the loan was made, different variable or fixed rates of repayment. And you have default rates. You have a number of other issues. You have consolidation rates as people consolidate loans. So this is a non-trivial exercise. We've worked very hard to make this as good as it can be. I'm very comfortable with it. But that's a very serious challenge for education because the subsidies is now – the present value of it is over $50 billion. So it's not a small number to manage in government. We do employ a lot of technology around our data processing, which lets our staff then focus on those other issues rather than just getting data out. So we are fairly free to look – take a hard look at these different credit issues. Now, in many cases, credit management for us – as you described it, Al, is about credit quality and other – well, in many cases, we don't have a lot of credit activity we can do. We're mandated on who is eligible to get loans, and it's not based on their credit performance. They're students. So in many cases, there aren't the typical banking loan application and review processes that you'd use. So we just have to do our best to monitor performance as it occurs and collect as well as we can. And we basically, as a by government mandate and by policy, have a write-off policy. So these loans get written off if someone dies, if they're disabled, or if they're discharged in bankruptcy, and many of them can't be discharged in bankruptcy. So we try and collect through the IRS, through collection agencies, through other factors. So we do work it hard. Again, there's a long tail on student loans. In terms of grants, we carefully monitor the grantees. And we work to assure that they have the financial viability and the systems and the ability to manage the money that we give them.
Now, Larry, you've emphasized the grant mission of the Department of Education. Could you tell us a little bit about the department's efforts to transition its discretionary grants application process to use the federal government-wide grants.gov site? First of all, can you tell us a little bit about grants.gov and what are some of the key benefits resulting from such a transition?
Well, grants.gov is basically a common portal where the public can come to the government for really two functions. One is I'll call it a find function, which is find out what grant possibilities are out there. And then secondly, an apply function where they can apply for the grant and submit it through grants.gov. So this is an electronic submission which is common across the government that then comes to the individual agencies. We have absolutely embraced grants.gov. It sure saves us a lot of paper. It saves us people having to operate a mail room, make a bunch of copies. We can then distribute electronically because we get it electronically. So it has been wonderful for us. When I got here, we were already at the 75% level of getting all of our applications through grants.gov. This year, the government has mandated 100. We'll be at 100%. I mean, that's something we want to do as well as meet a mandate, and we will do that. It's a very useful tool. I mean, benefits include for the grant community things about learning about available options on a consolidated basis fairly simply. The interaction with the federal government is certainly facilitated through grants.gov, and it makes it much easier for the grantee or potential grantee to make an application to find out what's there and then communicate back to the government. Simplified the processes, certainly taken cost and hassle out for the applicant and for us, and it's been a godsend for us. We're very pleased with it.
So it really does benefit not only your organization from a management perspective, but it also benefits the grantee community in terms of sort of ease of access and ease of application.
Yes, it certainly does. In fact, I would say it's probably even more beneficial to the grantee even than it is for us, because at least we have a group of people together to go deal with a large volume of grants. But they're dealing with one or two or three at a time. And I think this makes it much easier for them to deal with us. It lets us also then provide some technical assistance to the grant community, because they, because of grants.gov, can easily get to us with what are their questions, what are their issues. And we're more than willing to go to the appropriate places and help people figure out actually how to apply for grants.
Let's talk a little about the grants management line of business. That line of business seeks to establish a government-wide solution to support end-to-end grants management activities that promote access, service, and financial accountability. Larry, could you tell us about your department's efforts in managing this government-wide initiative?
Yes, we're proud of the grant system that we have today. Our system is called GAPS, and it really is an end-to-end process that manages the schedule of grants from the beginning of posting the applications, getting the applications, evaluating them, and awarding them through the process of payment. And it has a grantee-driven draw procedure. So the grantee can actually come into the system, draw their funds on a eligible basis, which is carefully monitored by us, without the need for invoices coming in, checks being written and sent out. So it's a completely automated system. The functionality is very good. We've gotten very good comments from our IG, from our outside auditors and others that the control features in there are actually very good and something you can rely on. And again, this is managing $55 billion worth of grants in a year's time. So it is very important. Now, because of that, we applied to be one of the grant management line of business providers. We're one of three selected to be one of those providers. We're in the process now of upgrading and redoing that system, not because its functionality is in question at all, but it's a 6 or 7 year old system. So the platform of trying to support another two or three agencies as well as our growth, and just because of the using more current communications technology and other things, we're upgrading it. So we're rewriting it, and this year we're going to have completed by the fall, by the end of the fiscal year, the payment piece, which is the real interface with our customers. That's where they come in and get the money. And that's attractive to many of the other agencies in government. In 2008 and 2009, we'll end up with the other two modules, both the application and the management of the grants processes, and we'll get those done in the next 2 years.
Could you tell us if there are plans to integrate the system with the grants.gov approach?
Well, they are in the current GAPS system is integrated with grants.gov. The input comes in from grants.gov directly into our GAPS system. So it is an integrated approach today. I mean, there's an interface between the two. It's not the same system. But grants.gov is a central government process for collecting it, which it then distributes to the agencies. We would then just be getting anybody else we processed, we'd be getting theirs as well. But no, we're fully integrated with grants.gov today.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification, Larry. In the last fiscal year, Education managed more than 10,000 discretionary grant awards. Could you tell us about the department's effort to ensure efficiency and reduce risk in this area?
The discretionary grants process, while it's large in number, it's relatively small in dollars in our total grants. We're talking about $5 billion of discretionary grants as opposed to, you know, $40, $45 billion of formula grants. But again, these are the ones that are less directive in the sense of having a clear set of criteria around how you award money. And of course, there are several factors in discretionary grants. One is, what are your priorities and what things are you going to put grants around? And then, is the grantee capable? Do we believe that we're going to get the results we want from those? What are the criteria around which we're going to measure the grant applications? So we have a handbook for the discretionary grant process, which is an internal document we use that really describes the whole process for managing discretionary grants. In addition, we have a book that we call EDGAR, and don't ask me what it stands for, I forget. It's another one of those acronyms in government. But it is the regulations around those grants. So we do have public regulations around the grants and what the grantee must do in order to make an application and be in conformance. Now, also within the department, and I described our GAPS, which is our automated system for dealing with grants, we have a high-risk module. So in that, we do have the history of how grantees have performed on a variety of grants. So we will designate those that have not performed as well as high risk, which then is part of the evaluation process when a grant comes in. And what are indicators of high risk? It could be a history of poor performance. We didn't get their performance reports. The performance reports didn't really address the issues. They're not financially stable. Management team doesn't seem to live up to the standards as described. Hasn't conformed terms and conditions of previous awards. It's had a lot of audit findings and other things like that. So we do try and maintain as much information as we can about potential grantees, or particularly or historically the grantees we've had, to help manage that process.
Larry, as the Department Contract and Acquisition Management falls under your purview, what are some of the key procurement management challenges education faces, and what has the department done to enhance its procurement capabilities to meet such challenges?
Well, that's a good question, because this in government is a real challenge. There's a lot of competition in the private sector for our good contract management people. So turnover is always a risk. Human resources is one of the key things we focus on in contract and acquisition management. Our resources are relatively flat. In fact, even the total volume of our contracts does not grow a lot year to year. So it's fairly stable. So with a smaller set of resources, we keep having to continue manage about the same number of contracts. So a very important thing is maintaining an adequately prepared and satisfied and sufficient workforce. Now, we depend on contractors to do much of the work of the organization. We outsource all of the loan processing. We outsource the management of our financial systems in terms of the servers and the software and those kinds of things. And generally, in education, we outsource much of that technology management. Well, that puts a real premium on our being able to be good contract managers, because now we not only have the responsibility of managing that contractor, but we have to manage to the contract. So we need to execute the contract well, or as we all know and from our backgrounds, the contract's not done well, a good contractor can walk through it performing very little and getting a lot of money. So there's a premium on our doing that, because it's such an important part of our own operations. We spend a little over $1 billion a year on contractor resources. And that provides all kinds of support. I mentioned technology outsourcing. It's also software development outsourcing. It's educational research. It's technical support to state and local education agencies. So it's a real mixed bag of types of contracting. It isn't just one kind. So keeping and maintaining and developing those skills is important. We also have a certification program that we require all of our people to go through. So we do have a contractor in the sense of people who do the contracting for us, certification program that they must go through and be qualified in.
Larry, I only have another minute or so, and I want to switch gears a little bit here. With the passage of No Child Left Behind Act, the accuracy of state and local education performance data has become very vital. Funding decisions are made and management actions are taken on the basis of this performance information. Could you elaborate on the department's EDFACS effort, and to what extent will the implementation of EDFACS help reduce reporting burdens on state and local education agencies?
Well, EDFACS is a is one of our department's initiatives to put performance data right at the middle of what we do. And it permits the K through 12 educational agencies, the state education agencies, to report directly into EdFacts. So it eliminates the problem of all the manual reports that then get sent in, that then get transcribed, and it provides a common platform for all states to report their data in a consistent fashion. So it does give us then very robust and timely information in a consistent fashion, and works very well, I think, both for education in terms of getting it quickly and easily, and it also reduces the state and district data burden.
Great. What does the future hold for the U.S. Department of Education? We will ask Larry Warder, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Education, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.